from deep inside your radio.
From Edinburgh, Scotland, ladies and gentlemen, just so that if I ever have to do Groundskeeper Willie, I'll have worked on the accent a little bit. That's not the reason I'm here. The reason I'm here is that in a short amount of time, certain young lady by the name of Judith Owen and I will be going on stage for the opening night of our month-long run at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. That's right, festival where you actually have to wear fringe. It's something to see. Whom, ladies and gentlemen, should you trust when it comes to your safety? Well, people in New Orleans really don't have a choice. They're trusting the same people who screwed up the building of the levees last time around, the United States Army Corps of Engineers. And in another trust-building exercise, the Corps has been missing its self-imposed deadlines for preparations for this hurricane season all summer long. And as if that hadn't sent enough residents of New Orleans scattering in fear, we have this. The crews have been scrambling to begin bolstering several sections of sheet pile wall. Those are steel reinforcements for levees in western suburbs of New Orleans that are considered potential weak links in the area's storm defense system. Under the supervision of an Army Corps of Engineers engineer, tons of dirt are going to be spread and compacted behind the old sheet piling, as well as another section that joins a flood wall to a levee. Those are weak points because, of course, they're junctures, don't you know? The dirt is expected to give the walls additional stability, but it's a far cry, according to the New Orleans Times-Picayune, from the improvements that the Corps officials initially promised would be in place by the height of the storm season. That more ambitious plan would have replaced existing sheet piles with longer, stronger sheet panels, straightened out some meandering wall sections, closed gaps that must otherwise be sandbagged, which we're in the 21st century, sorry, and made other engineering improvements where steel meets dirt. Such transition points were particularly vulnerable in the aftermath of Katrina. That work hasn't been done, ladies and gentlemen, because of paperwork. The process of documenting exactly how post-Katrina money from Congress will be spent is required by federal law of the Corps. That process isn't complete yet, don't you know? That documentation must be finished, and new operating agreements must be signed between the Corps and local government and levee board sponsors before construction contracts can be awarded, according to Corps officials. In the meantime, new sheet pile walls and beefed up transition points were the backbone of the interim plan. Unable to issue contracts for that work, the Corps turned instead to the, quote, interim plan, dirt and lots of it, to buck up the worrisome walls built over the years. The task was assigned to the Corps' own small work crew. Congress allows the agency to use to do smaller specialized jobs when no private contractors are available. The crew has equipment to haul and spread dirt, but not to drive the 60-foot-long sheet piles that the interim plan relied on. This, of course, is the interim plan. Crew made little headway because of recent heavy rainstorms. Geotechnical engineers from the Corps will oversee to ensure that appropriate revised specifications are met because they can't possibly meet the real specifications for such work. Now, the most in need of bolstering in that particular area was 1,500 feet of a flood wall. That work was done without delay because the Corps declared it an imminent threat and did the work on an emergency basis. So apparently you can do it without the paperwork if it's an emergency, but just strengthening and filling gaps in places where populated areas could flood again is not regarded as an emergency. And lest you think it's only the Corps, the USA Today's report this week on the federal budget said 18 of 24 departments and agencies produce annual reports certified by auditors. This is a big change from about a decade ago. Up till that point, the federal government didn't have its books audited, so it could get away with real murder. The 18 of 24 departments produce annual reports certified by auditors. Among those that don't, the Department of Defense, which, according to USA Today, has record-keeping trouble so severe that auditors refuse to certify the reliability of its books. And to cement your trust in the Pentagon. There is no evidence that Pentagon officials intentionally misled the September 11th commission when they gave inaccurate accounts about actions at the time of the terrorist attacks, a Defense Department spokesman said this week. A forthcoming report from the Pentagon's own inspector general will address the question of whether military commanders intentionally misled the 9/11 commission. But, quote, the spokesperson, there is nothing that indicates the information provided to the commission was knowingly false, unquote. Count the weasel words in that one lovely sentence, ladies and gentlemen. Let's all trust the Pentagon and all of its many parts, shall we? Hello, welcome to the show.
Rocking in the kitchen till the break of the day. Monkey and a woman in a uniform. Rocking in the kitchen till the break of the dawn. You're my baby,
you're my baby. ready and not gonna steal your money. Gonna rock you, honey, ready and not gonna steal your money. Monkey and a woman in a negligee, rocking in the kitchen till the break of the day. Monkey and a woman in a uniform, rocking in the kitchen till the break of the dawn. You're my baby girl, you're my baby girl. I'm a machine. You're my baby girl. First I hit a rock, then I hit a roll. Now I'm hitting on you. First I hit a rock, then I hit a roll. Now I'm hitting on you. Can a man be good to his brother? Can a woman carry the weight? Can we work to help one another?
From the edge of the Firth of Forth. That is what it's called, yeah? I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show from Edinburgh, Scotland. We'll all be in kilts before it's all over. Ladies and gentlemen, French fries are back on the menu in the House of Representatives 3 years after the name was ditched in favor of freedom fries. What a nutty thing that was, wasn't it? Cute. House Republicans renamed fries and French toast in 2003 to protest France's opposition to the war in Iraq. Those nutty French, what were they thinking? The change back is getting much less coverage than the original patriotic name change. A House official would only say that fries are no longer being offered under the freedom nomenclature, according to BBC News. The Washington Times contacted aides of the two congressmen behind the move to Freedom Fries to see if they could shed light on the situation. We don't have a comment for your story, said a spokeswoman for Republican Representative Bob Ney. Ney. At the time, Ney, together with Walter Jones, pushed for Freedom Fries. He said the action was a, quote, small but symbolic effort to show the strong displeasure of many on Capitol Hill with the actions of our so-called ally, France. What were those French thinking? The move followed the lead of a North Carolina restaurant owner. The switch to Freedom Fries was blah, 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 blah. The Senate cafeterias never changed their menus. A spokeswoman for the French embassy, I'd like them to have a spokeswoman. How Gallic, asked about current French-U.S. ties, told the Washington Times that the two countries were working closely on the Middle East. Lest you think, however, that Americans are peculiarly nutty when it comes to that kind of nomenclature change. Just to put us absolutely in our place, to let us know exactly with whom we stand, Dateline Tehran. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has ordered government and cultural bodies to use modified Persian words to replace foreign words that have crept into the language, such as pizzas, which will now be known as elastic loaves. Watch out for those elastic fishes. That's what the presidential decree orders all government agencies, newspapers, and publications to use words deemed more appropriate by the official language watchdog, the Farhangistan Zaban-e-Farsi. I would change the name of that, first of all, before I do anything else. Among other changes, a chat will become a short talk, and a cabin will be renamed a small room. So we have plenty of help on the, please rename this before I sin against my language or my approved political stance again, department. But now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
So much sorrow, so little time. Mel Gibson's acts of contrition and his several apologies have been accepted, at least by Florrie Van Beek. Van Beek, a Holocaust survivor, was the proposed subject of the ABC miniseries on the Holocaust, which Gibson was supposed to produce. ABC has since removed him from the project. Talking to Roger Friedman of FoxNews.com, Mrs. Van Beek said, quote, "I believe in atonement. In the Jewish religion, if you atone for your sins, you have to be forgiven. I forgive Mel Gibson and accept his apology," unquote. She, by the way, pointed out that the real producer of her miniseries was Daniel Sladak, a former talent manager. "I've never met Mel Gibson, and I've never seen Passion of the Christ," Van Bleek told FoxNews.com. She added, quote, "Mel Gibson was just involved because he had a deal with ABC." Chicago Cubs third base coach Chris Spire returned to the Cubs on Thursday after an eight-day leave of absence to take care of personal matters. He was arrested July 19th for driving under the influence and failing to stop at a stop sign. Did he say anything about the Jews? I don't know. Spire had managed to avoid the media spotlight, but he addressed the media before Thursday night's game against St. Louis. Quote, "I need to make an open apology to my family and the people who have been close to me at this time. I want to apologize to the Cubs management. They've been completely supportive, and the last thing that we needed this year was to bring another distraction. We've had enough of those, and for that, I'm deeply sorry." Cubs have distractions? Really? Dateline Havana, Cuban dictator Fidel Castro said his health was stable and that he was in high spirits after his stomach surgery. Check the rum cabinet. In a statement read on Cuban state television, Castro apologized for not being able to provide further details, saying, in his words, "the American threat dictated that his health must be treated as an official secret." I think everybody's health should be an official secret, but that's just me. Orange County, Florida, Sheriff Kevin Beery, ladies and gentlemen, issued an apology for comments made after announcing the death of Deputy Michael Callen. Beery's comments sparked outrage throughout the Hispanic community, inundating local Spanish-speaking radio stations in Florida with complaints and outrage. Late in the week, Beery sent an apology letter to the Spanish-language newspaper El Nuevo Día after criticism over his comments. Quote, "I'm irritated," these were his comments, "I'm irritated with the federal government right now because these individuals who killed the cops in Central Florida are illegal aliens," Beery said. "I'm tired of the rhetoric, I'm tired of nothing being done, and something needs to be done because with the violence, our quality of life is going down in Central Florida. And if we don't take it back and start doing something and the government has to make the first move, we're going to be in a world of hurt. I'm not picking on anybody, I'm all for legal immigration and blah, blah, blah. We've got to do something and change the way we do business because it's bullcrap." The letter of apology reads in part, quote, "I apologize to everyone in Central Florida. I did not intend to infer that all illegal residents are violent offenders. I want to make one thing perfectly clear. Hey, Dick Nixon lives. There is no single segment of this community who is responsible for crime." Really? Not the criminals? Maybe that's overly apologetic. Oh. I want to apologize for the intermitting sound of the CD, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, we're all sorry about that. But the apologies of the week do continue. A Chicago rapid transit crew member used a vulgar phrase that included the word mother, can I still say that on public radio, not on PBS, to refer to passengers. Quote, "It's one thing to be on the intercom and use a cuss word. That's not that big of a deal," said one passenger. "But to refer to his passengers as that, I think it's kind of uncalled for." Union Pacific Railway, which is investigating the Thursday incident, apologized to riders, said Mark Davis, a spokesman for the railroad. The spokeswoman for Metra, which runs the commuter line, said the vulgar language is, quote, "completely unacceptable." This is the second time this year that a Union Pacific employee has used a vulgar term over the public address system. I think FCC should fine him $345,000 per, just like us. In January, a conductor used a sexual epithet to describe city officials who enacted a ban prohibiting smoking on train platforms. That conductor turned himself in, was suspended for a short time without pay, and personally apologized to riders. So much bad behavior, ladies and gentlemen. The Roman Catholic Diocese of London, Ontario, Canada, has apologized for its failure to protect 47 women who were sexually abused by a former parish priest. What do they expect? It's only a diocese. The apology follows 83-year-old Charles Henry Silvestri's guilty plea to 47 charges stemming from sexual assaults against young females between 1954 and 1990. They didn't quite have time to figure out what was going on. In a one-page press release, Bishop Ronald Fabro said he sincerely apologizes, quote, to the victims and their families for the abuse that they suffered at the hands of Father Silvestri and for suffering the consequences of that abuse over the years. He also apologized for the failure of the church to protect the victims and their families. In the past, the diocese has publicly refused to acknowledge the case. One of Silvestri's victims said the diocese only apologized when, quote, its back was up against the wall. It's a little too late, the 44-year-old woman said. If they want to do something, they have to do something concrete. Well, don't call the Corps of Engineers if you want something concrete. It's my recommendation. Call the diocese. And a podium protest by a top-ranked downhill mountain bike racer from Maple Ridge, British Columbia, has quashed her shot at the world championship title and reignited a debate about competitive transgendered athletes. Danica Schroeder had her racing license suspended for 3 months by the Canadian Cycling Association following an incident on the podium at the National Mountain Bike Downhill Championships in Whistler, British Columbia. Schroeder has been a competitive downhill racer for 6 years, just missed the national title for female downhill racing, losing out to Michelle Dumoresc by a second. Dumoresc was born a man, but underwent a sex change operation in the mid-1990s and now competes as a woman. During the awards ceremony, Schroeder traded her jersey for a T-shirt reading, quote, 100% pure woman, apparently in protest of Dumoresc's inclusion in the competition. Canadian Cycling Association spokeswoman Florence Bourg said the CCA decided to suspend Schroeder because of the disrespect she showed to Dumoresc and for behavior that damaged the reputation of the sport. Quote, says Schroeder, I would like to apologize for my actions. I'm sorry for the embarrassment and hurt I've caused. I have many issues, but this was not the right forum to air them. I apologize to everyone who was offended. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a oh-so copyrighted feature of this broadcast. News of the warm. Oh-so copyrighted.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Ladies and gentlemen, government and media organizations have been accused of undermining efforts to tackle global warming by using alarmist language that amounts to, quote, climate porn. I knew it was getting me hot, but I didn't know why. The apocalyptic way in which climate change is often portrayed in the press and on government websites succeeds only in, quote, thrilling people, unquote, while undermining practical efforts to tackle the problem. That, according to the Institute for Public Policy Research in London, it analyzed reports of climate change in 600 articles, 90 television advertisements and news clips, as well as websites run by government and green groups. I don't know if they included Al Gore's movie or the supposedly satirical counter video on YouTube that was actually sponsored by a public relations firm that works for ExxonMobil, among others. A report found that the issue was discussed in wildly divergent ways, and it argued that this meant the message to the public on climate change was, quote, confusing, contradictory, and chaotic. Hey, welcome to the modern world, babe. It says that the most prevalent tone for the discussion was alarmist, and this was not confined to the tabloid press. It even cited a video on climate change produced by the British government's Department for the Environment. Scientists say the more news of the warm. It's not done yet. The scientists say the appearance of rare clouds over Antarctica could be an indicator of global warming. Dr. Andrew Klekosiuk from the Australian Antarctic Division says nacreous clouds are naturally occurring and indicate extremely cold temperatures in the stratosphere. Cold, but I thought you said warm. The stratosphere is between 8 and 50 kilometers above the Earth's surface and gets colder as temperatures closer to Earth get warmer. See how simple it is? Dr. Klekosiuk says as global warming increases, temperatures in the stratosphere should drop. Brr! And that has been reflected in data collected over the last 25 years. It's been predicted by models. They're smarter than we think. Oh, I see. Heat waves like those that have scorched Europe and the United States in recent weeks are becoming more frequent because of global warming, say scientists who have studied decades of weather records and computer models of past, present, and future climate. While it's impossible to attribute any one weather event to climate change, several recent studies suggest that human-generated emissions of heat-trapping gases have produced greater weather variability and higher overall temperatures, which raise the odds of longer, more intense heat waves. That makes the next item sound a little less goofy than it did, at least to me, on first hearing, which is that conservative Christian broadcaster Pat Robertson said this week on the 700 Club that the wave of scorching temperatures across the United States has converted him into a believer in global warming. Quote, "We really need to address the burning of fossil fuels," Robertson said. "It is getting hotter and the ice caps are melting and there is a buildup of carbon dioxide in the air." This week he says that. The heat index, the perceived temperature based on both air temperature and humidity, reached 115 in some regions of the East Coast. But they have air conditioning, ladies and gentlemen, unlike where we are. Robertson told viewers that was the most convincing evidence I've seen on global warming in a long time. And as I say, it seems goofy until you take into account that scientist's report that says maybe it's true. Last year, of course, Robertson said natural disasters affecting the globe, including Hurricane Katrina, might be signs that the biblical apocalypse was nearing. And that is news of the warm. But on the subject of weather, ladies and gentlemen, are there still Taliban around in Afghanistan and adjacent areas, like, say, our good friend Pakistan? Yes. Quote, Donald Rumsfeld. This is exact quote from Donald Rumsfeld this week. Are there still Taliban around? You bet. Are they occupying safe havens in Afghanistan and other places, in Pakistan and other places? Certainly they are. Is the violence up? Yes. Does the violence tend to be up during the summer, in the spring, summer, and fall months? Yes, it does. And it tends to decline during the winter period. Does that represent failed policy? I don't know. I would say not. Donald Rumsfeld on the weather.
Welcome back to the Celebrity Weather Network. Weather, celebrities, what more do you need? This hour, Don Rumsfeld and Pat Robertson.
Well, goodness gracious, Pat, we're back.
Good Lord has been very kind to us, mm-hmm. Don, and so has the scheduling department.
Yep.
They put only 3 minutes of spots in there, and that's a blessing. Don, you've got the long-range outlook, or am I losing my gift for trivial prophecy?
You are not, sir. Northern Hemisphere, we're smack in the middle of summer. A hot one.
Maybe a cosmically hot one. You know, I'm thinking about it. Maybe it's just God's anger at gay days at Disney facilities all over the Northern Hemisphere.
Anywho, we're looking at about 6 more weeks of the hot stuff, followed by fall, the metrics I'm using. And, of course, we can only use the satellite imagery and Doppler 2020 pictures that we have.
Of course, they tell
me that our insurgency index will be up in the high 60s, low 70s these next 4.5 months.
That anger might lead to that uptick in hurricanes along the eastern seaboard, God was telling me about last night. Of course, it is always possible that God is wrong.
Not in this time slot. Looking for a downturn on the II starting in about mid-November. That should take us into the spring. Numbers in the low 50s for insurgency probability, although, of course, those are just numbers, and I've never personally used them. Pat, you're looking at some closer range indices, if I'm not mistaken.
Checking out areas with HSA, high sinfulness average. Last 2 weeks, no unusual so-called natural phenomena, no floods, quakes, or canes. So that would suggest God is saving something up for maybe the next sweeps period. You might want to take along a jacket the next few weeks.
Coming up next hour, weather and insurgency. What's the connection? A deeper look.
And some cool and sunny places to take the kids this weekend that won't make God send storms.
Coming up on Celebrity Weather Network, we're your fair weather friends.
There was a young and troubled girl who dreamt of all the things she'd do. when she was grown and put to right, and all her gifts came shining through. She waited with bated breath to be discovered like you do. And with each frustration, each unhappiness, and she just put on her climbing shoes. She watched the others race ahead, the fireworks, the sparks that flew. And every time that the stars aligned, she just put on her climbing shoes. Would you give up all this yearning, learning what it's all about, and speak without experience? Well, would you? You tell me all the latest thing, a shame on inner skin so new. And you ask me why I take so long to make my deepest dreams come true. I tell you, I know exactly who I am, and I know exactly what I do. I know that some people fly straight to the heady heights, and me, I put on my climbing shoes.
It's not Harry's fault.
You could say that again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show, News of the Godly. It's been a while. Pilgrims who queued to drink from a miracle fountain flowing from a statue of the late Pope John Paul II in Poland were disappointed to hear it's just a council-installed water pipe. Locals in the Pope's birthplace of Wadowice, near Krakow, thought a miracle had happened when water started to run from the base of his statue. Like you do when that happens. Word spread throughout Poland, and pilgrims from around the country visited to fill bottles with the holy water. However, Mayor Eva Filipiak dashed their illusions by admitting that a water pipe had been installed under the statue. Quote, "We didn't mean anything by it. It was just supposed to make the statue look prettier," she said. By the way, as I mentioned, I'm in Scotland, and this is the new Europe. You know, people in America think that we're the only country that is contending with the matter of immigration at the moment. But I was down at the corner store shop, as we say, buying some new newspapers this morning. And, you know, the convenience store clerk was an immigrant from Poland. That's where they're getting their cheap labor these days, Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is the Mexico of Western Europe. So we'll keep an eye on that and see if they handle it any better than we do. And by we, I mean U.S. U.S. of what is it again? A. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, let's catch up on the forgotten war, a little thing called Iraq. First of all, this is old business, if there ever was. The Republican chairman of the Senate, now, I believe it was discussed on this broadcast no more than a week or two ago, that part two of the Senate Intelligence Committee report, which was going to tell us how the administration used the intelligence in the run-up to the war. Well, the Republican chairman of that committee lashed out of the Bush White House this week, criticizing attempts by the administration to keep parts of that report secret. The chairman, Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas, said his committee had completed the first two parts of its investigation, but he chastised the White House for efforts to classify most of the part that examines intelligence provided to the Bush administration by the Iraqi National Congress, Ahmed Chalabi's group of crazy exiles. Quote, "I have been disappointed by this administration's unwillingness to declassify material contained in these reports, material which I believe better informs the public, but that does not, I repeat, does not jeopardize intelligence methods, sources, and operations," Roberts said. One completed section of the Senate report is said to be a harsh critique of how information from the Iraqi exile group made its way into intelligence reports, said people who have read it, but spoke on condition of anonymity because they enjoy living. The second section compares pre-war assessments of Iraq's WMDs and its links to terrorism with what American troops and intelligence operatives have since found. The two parts of the report will not be made public for weeks. But Pat Roberts, who has been a staunch supporter of the administration, now suddenly coming out with a harsh critique. That's all you can say. And lest you think that people in New Orleans are picking on the United States Army Corps of Engineers, another report on the Forgotten War project to build a critical oil pipeline in northern Iraq has fallen more than 2 years behind schedule, costing the Iraqi government $14.8 billion in revenue and jeopardizing the safety of local water supplies. Aside from that, it's in very good shape. This according to a report by U.S. government auditors. There are those pesky auditors again. The 31-mile pipeline, designed to connect Iraq's northern oil fields with a refinery, like you would, is intended to replace an old, decrepit line that had been leaking oil for years. But contractors were unable to finish construction of the new pipeline as scheduled, March 2004, so oil is pooling in the open air rather than being sped to market. Even when the project is complete, the auditors conclude there is no way of knowing whether it will actually be an improvement because reconstruction officials have not been monitoring its progress. There is no reasonable assurance that project construction will meet the standards of the design because the U.S. government's processes to independently verify project completeness and quality were ineffective. This according to our own government. The project is managed, ladies and gentlemen, by the United States Army Corps of Engineers. So wouldn't you move to New Orleans if they're protecting you? This is just the latest in a series of projects that have gone awry in Iraq. The U.S.-funded reconstruction project has been plagued by cost overruns and schedule setbacks. Security, of course, but also flawed management and poor planning. Something to make you proud. Now we're transferring control to the Iraqis, but as that happens, Iraq will need oil revenue to fund the work. The new pipeline was supposed to increase the flow of oil and thereby supply money to the Iraqis, ladies and gentlemen. Speaking of construction projects that may go awry, Senator Harry Reid has a new argument against the Yucca Mountain, Nevada nuclear waste dump. That's the only place approved for high-level nuclear waste in America, and it's way behind schedule. The contractor building the repository is the same one that built Boston's troubled Big Dig highway project where the ceiling tiles came down and killed a lady. But this only has to last, what, 10,000, 100,000 years? So we can trust them to do that. I say trust yourself, maybe your closest relatives, and a couple of crazy people in the mountains of Idaho. Back to Iraq for just a moment, because it is the forgotten war. The Bush administration's policy of refusing to talk with nations and groups linked to terrorism, including Syria, Iran, and Palestinian factions, has sharply limited U.S. maneuvering room during the war between Israel and Hezbollah. This is according to outside experts. Iran is, of course, Hezbollah's prime sponsor. They got sponsors? I'm sustaining, and they got sponsors. Syria is the key conduit for the flow of missiles that have rained down on Israeli territory. This has constrained U.S. foreign policy in many damaging ways, not talking to Syria or Iran. That's said by Flint Leverett, a White House official during President Bush's first term. He argued unsuccessfully for deeper engagement with Syria. The United States, he says, does not have effective diplomatic channels for managing the situation, much less resolving it. His comments are echoed by other former officials of this administration, not the Clinton administration now, including former Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage and Paul Pillar, former National Intelligence Officer for the Near East and South Asia, said, quote, we have greatly handicapped ourselves by our refusal to use all the diplomatic channels and avenues available to us. On a related subject, British Prime Minister Tony Blair, who's been under sharply increasing attack, including from members of his own cabinet, for his position, for his presumed failure or refusal to add his voice to those calling for an immediate ceasefire in the Middle East. He's postponing his summer vacation in Barbados so he could stay in London and work toward that UN resolution that was at least agreed upon by the United States and France. Hello, France. Blair believes the coming days are crucial for securing agreement on a resolution. While he can speak to other world leaders by phone while on vacation, he didn't want to be out of touch on a long-haul flight. He reportedly plans a family holiday in Barbados. And on a related subject, President Bush arrived in Waco to begin his 10-day vacation at his Crawford so-called ranch. This scheduled week and a half in Texas is a far cry from last year's working vacation, which was the longest presidential retreat in more than three decades before it was cut short by Hurricane Katrina after nearly a month. So Tony Blair is cutting short or is postponing his vacation. President Bush is on his right now. There might be a phone call happening next here on the show.
I wasn't welcome in the Arab countries. Hello, White House secure line.
Should hope so, but who is this, Condi?
Yes, Mr. President. The president is finishing his workout. I finished first. You need the password?
Not my problem. Just maybe hurry him along a little.
Oh, I've been trying to hurry people along for about the past 2.5 weeks, sir. I'm off the clock for the next 3 hours. This is my workout and WC time.
Just trying to tell the young fella that maybe being on vacation right about now is sending the wrong message.
If I may, I tend to doubt it. This administration is all about sending very clear messages. It's the moral clarity of our messaging. It's one of the deep satisfactions of working for your son. You should be very proud.
Of course, pride is part of the package, a big part, but maybe you could just nudge him off his bicycle or whatever. Really feel that the contrast with Tony Blair is a bad one. You got Blair postponing his vacation. 43 here isn't.
And of course, if our two countries' policies were in lockstep, as so many of the Prime Minister's critics say, why, we would be coordinating our vacation schedules, as you suggest. But we're two allies who agree to differ on who should vacation when and for how long. And I think that the president thinks that makes for a healthier relationship between us.
You don't think it makes Tony Blair look like the one who's actually doing the heavy lifting right now? Speaking of which, is the spouse
He owes me a few more reps. Mm. This is a moment, Mr. President, when Prime Minister Blair has an opportunity to showcase his relevance. We think that's in the long-term interest of his short-term interest.
So you're saying that this is sort of an agreed-upon decision as opposed to some situation where the United States, under my son's direction, has so isolated itself from the admittedly pernicious players in the region that our understudy has had to assume the role?
Mr. President 41, I think both Mr. President 43 and I feel that the world's only superpower cannot be isolated almost by definition, even if we're not in on the conversations. We are in on them. So, yes, this is an opportunity decided upon by the decider-in-chief to allow our partner in peace an opportunity to craft a ceasefire resolution that does not sacrifice the quality of a ceasefire for the sake of its immediateness, as the president likes to put it.
Get any idea he's not going to be putting it personally to me in the next little while?
He's got about 20 more minutes.
20?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got medical procedures take less time than that. Okay, Condi, you just tell him I called and said to have a great vacation.
Will do, sir. I'm sure I'm authorized to say he sends his love to his mother.
Be nice to think so, anyway. Take care, Miss Secretary.
You too, Mr. President. All right, give me two more.
The long and winding road disappear. I've seen that road before. It always leads me here. Lead me to your door. The wild and windy
It's so easy when you're in love. When you have someone to cling to, when your heart is not your own. Hard when you are lonely, when you are your one and only, when there's no one else to share. Oblivious to others, when the stardust in the air and moonlight. Like the moment when love found you, and all around astounds you, keeps me wishing you were here. Wishing you were here. Wishing you were here. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All he really needs to make him end inside. And Kelly, you're running out of time. Kelly, you're going down in style. And swallow your pride and get on a train out of such a fool, thinking fame will do what only time can do, hoping I would be alright if I could have a perfect life, just like
You know, if it weren't for the plumbing, I might stay over here. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of The Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshear.com and kcrw.com. Available on the big 104, the mighty 104 in Berlin. A free download at www.audible.com/theshow. Available as a free podcast at kcrw.com and on channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio. And it'd be just like having hot water in the flat if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, and Pittsburgh desks, and to Graham at Radio 4th. In Edinburgh, The Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions, ladies and gentlemen, and originates through the facilities of Radio 4th in Edinburgh, Scotland, and today, and normally, and every week, through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.